This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
From MPB Think Radio, this is Money Talks. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. They're both chartered financial analysts, and Ryder holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. We've got a new angle on student loans to talk about today, the canceling of student debt. What's the difference between canceling and forgiveness? Who's eligible and when? And what happens after your debt is wiped away? We'll discuss the new student debt elimination programs between your personal finance questions. Contact us by email. The address is money@mpbonline.org. So good morning. Ryder, let's start with you today. What financial news is on your mind?
Good morning. So we had another inflation report came out today, and I know we seem to talk about them every time they come out and even sometimes when they're not coming out. But this one was what we call surprisingly higher, but it was still very low. Inflation for the month of August was 0.1%, which is more than it was in July, which was 0.0%, but vastly less than the kind of 0.6 to 1.2 or up to 1.3 numbers we had been getting kind of all year. So it was, a lot of folks were expecting a slight decline kind of following on from July. We got an ever so slight increase, but really just not the same numbers as we've been seeing earlier in the year. And much of that was due gasoline, fuel prices still coming down a lot, but other items, so housing, medical, things like that have increased a little bit. And that's kind of pushing that, all the other kind of core inflation items kind of pushing that back up. And those, some of those just lagging the broader increases that we saw earlier this year.
So, Nancy, before your take on the financial news, I heard on the news this morning that gas prices are one of the main factors that go into, I guess, consumers and what they think about the economy. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that gasoline is so present in everyone's mind?
Well, it's something we deal with every day. And we constantly talk about prices at the pump. We chase
constantly
for the lowest price. Yes.
Unfortunately.
Absolutely. And the fact that it's gone down, and certainly we're not back to where we were pre-pandemic, I don't think yet, but mm-hmm. it's all relative. So once we hit these higher prices,
and now that we've bumped down, it feels really good.
Mm-hmm. What else is on your mind, financially speaking?
Well, connected to that, as far as inflation, is the labor market. And so what we see right now is a very healthy labor market. There are 1.9 openings for every one person unemployed. And so that means we need more people to work. And that also means with fewer people working, that's going to push labor prices up.
President Biden's plan to forgive federal student loan debt up to $20,000 for Pell Grant recipients and up to $10,000 for others who qualify was announced last month. Today on the show, we'll be talking about student loan forgiveness and taking your personal finance questions. You can send an email to money@mpbonline.org. Before we get into the details of the new student loan news, let's get some on the same page with some terminology. So, Nancy, starting again with you, what is student loan forgiveness?
Well, there are many ways to look at this, whether it's forgiveness, cancellation. All of that means you no longer have to make payments on that loan. And that's what gives people that relief. And so there are different programs out there available already, and we have this new program that allows for total forgiveness up to $10,000 in some cases, up to $20,000 in others. So this is a big relief for a lot of families.
So we can use the term in this case, forgiveness and cancellation interchangeably?
Well, pretty much. The only difference we might have here is something called deferment. And deferment is when you're just asking for a little window of relief. And we used to do that a lot with folks. as they just needed to pull back and get some relief from payments for usually about a 6 month period of time.
Ryder, what are some of the various reasons you might not no longer need to make payments on a student loan?
So some of the biggest ones that we talk about are public service loan forgiveness. That was a program introduced, I want to say, in the Bush years about, what was that, 20 years ago? For if you're working in the nonprofit sector, if you're working in the government sector, and especially for teachers, this is a really big one. And it just, as long as you're working in a public service type job, you make specific payments over a 10-year period, then you should have your loan balance forgiven. That program was fairly restrictive when it started, and some of these changes that have been announced recently have broadened that, have made it a little more clear, or at least the proposals. I'm not sure if they're finalized rules yet, but the proposal is to make it a little broader so it's easier for folks to qualify based on their occupation, and just a little more streamlined as far as how those payments are made, what payments qualify, because they used to be very, very strict and very specific. And for a long time, even on this show, we were talking about people who were struggling just to meet some of these very technical requirements and them not being clear. So hopefully that's going to be a lot easier for folks. So also, if the school you attended closed, there's actually a list on the studentaid.gov, fantastic resource, the number one resource you should have if you have questions about your student loans, studentaid.gov. But there's a number of schools that they either closed or they were shut down by the Department of Education or became non-accredited and closed. And a lot of those, a lot of people who went there are eligible to have their loan discharged or forgiven or canceled, whatever terminology you want to use, just because clearly you maybe didn't get what you expected for the money you paid. So controversially, student loans are extremely difficult to discharge in bankruptcy, and sometimes even in death, they can be quite pernicious on people's estates. Although it is possible to get them discharged there, that's not super great. There's, of course, if there's any fraud, if somebody else applied for these loans, if you did not apply for these loans, if you were defrauded when you went to school, all sorts of things like that, you can get forgiven. Those are really kind of a teeny tiny case by case sorts of situations, though. But yes, if you get a lot of forgiveness, then and it wipes out your balance, that's a big one. Another one is if you are on an income based plan and make too little income. So income based plans, they are based on your income after the some percentage of the poverty level. Right now it's 150%, which for a single person, that's the poverty level is about $12,000. So 150% is about $18,000. If you make less than $18,000 and you're on an income-based plan, you most likely don't have repayments, although interest can still accumulate. And the new proposal is to raise that to 225% of the poverty level, which would put it at about, what's that, about $27,000 of income. So well, that's close. People are gonna revoke my math degree. So that would, if you make less than that, you would not have those repayments to make. Again, interest can still accumulate, but you are also probably on the track for some sort of forgiveness, be that student public service forgiveness or just the standard forgiveness included in your repayment plan.
And Nancy, it's important, I guess, to remind folks that we're talking about student loans through the federal government here, and so some people might have student loans that are not being forgiven.
Yeah, that's the sad part about this, because this only applies to those federal loans, and you can call your servicer and find out, is my loan federal or not? Mm-hmm. But we do have people who have private loans. Thankfully, that's not a huge percentage. Most people have some loan connected to the federal government in some way. And so they will get some relief. But again, if you have a private loan, and I've come across those people, and you are not eligible for any of these special programs, you are not eligible for any forgiveness at all.
If you have a question for our experts, send an email to money@mpbonline.org. We're discussing reasons some might not have to finish paying off their student loans today. Who qualifies for the $20,000 and $10,000 forgiveness? We'll tell you next. You're listening to Money Talks. Our website, moneytalks.mpbonline.org, is one way to hear past Money Talks broadcasts. You can also download the MPB Public Media app and listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. Borrowers are eligible for this relief if their individual income is less than $125,000, $250,000 for married couples. No high-income individual or high-income household in the top 5% of incomes will benefit from this action. So we had a question come in, a writer talking about subsidized versus unsubsidized loans and how that all fits into the equation.
Yes, so subsidized and unsubsidized loans are two just slightly different loan terms on federal loans. So there's not a substantial difference between these loans. A lot of your initial, the first, the best loans that you apply for as an undergraduate student or as a prospective undergraduate student are going to be subsidized, which means that while you are in school, you do not have interest payments to make. Interest does not even accrue. So they may give you a 5% loan, but for $1,000 at 5%, if you had interest accrue, then after a year, you would owe $1,050. With the subsidized loan, you still only owe $1,000. That's the only difference. It's a slight difference in the terms that just allows you to go through school without worrying about interest accruing. So forgiveness, all the rules are still the same. The difference would be if you have subsidized loans, your balance is likely a little bit lower. So you're just going to get a little bit more forgiven. That's really all that's happening there.
And it's just important to note that these are still federal loans.
That's correct. Only with the federal loan. Again, the federal loans. And what Nancy had mentioned before with the private loans, well, one thing I've seen a lot is private banks, startup banks, over the past few years when interest rates were super low and student loans were really in the headlines, they were really out there advocating for people to refinance their loans with the private bank. And if you had refinanced, then you very likely refinanced to a private lender and you're most likely not eligible anymore. Consolidation loans, that is a federal program. If you consolidated, again, we're getting weird with the terminology. If you consolidated, you're probably still federal loans. You're probably eligible. And in fact, the consolidation loans were designed so that people could get into better loan repayment terms from where they already were. It kind of helped simplify the system a little bit.
But some of the consolidated loans were moving from federal to private. So you've got that same problem again.
So, Ryder, if someone qualifies for this program, what is it that they need to do now? And is this a fairly tight window of availability?
Yes, absolutely. So there are a couple of different deadlines. One of the most important that I do want to mention, if you think or if you may be at all eligible for public service loan forgiveness and maybe made payments previously that weren't eligible, because, again, there were a lot of technicalities around the payments. You had to be on the right plan. Your employer had to be just the right employer. You had to have your income verified, all of this verified. And so even if you made a payment and you were a good, upstanding citizen, they still may not have counted that as a public service payment. I actually have a friend who was a government employee for, oh man, I want to say 9 years and 4 months, and he's just 8 months. He can go back and certify his 9 years and 4 months, but he's not going to go back and work for the government for eight more months. So he's just kind of missed that boat there. But you need to do that. You need to log in and get all of those things updated and verified, those past payments verified by, I believe, October 31st is the deadline. So if the federal government, if the Department of Education and your loan servicer have your income information, and again, the individual income less than $125,000, married couple income less than $250,000, and that is for the years 2020 and 2021. It's not clear if they're looking at both or either. So it's not clear if your income was lower for one of them if you qualify, or if it needs to be lower for both. Essentially, that's just making sure, because the way the forgiveness law was written, it was the HEROES Act. Again, another George Bush act about student loans. It was written such that you have to target the forgiveness towards those affected by, I believe the word was, a national emergency or some sort of crisis, and the pandemic is a qualifying national emergency. So if they're impacted, we see that income level go down. So you need to make sure they have that information on file. You can call your servicer. If you know your servicer, that's who you make your payments to. If you don't know your servicer, you can go to studentaid.gov and look that up. You can create an account, log in, check it. They can find out who your servicer is. So that's very important. They need to have that information on file. There may be a small application if they did not already have that on file. I do not believe that information has come out. They're working very hard on that application. Should have that out by October. Of course, keep in mind that there is a payment pause right now, so don't be making any payments. Spend all your energy right now figuring out your details and making sure if you have public service payments, then you are qualified and signed up there.
This is Money Talks, and today we're talking about the Student Loan Forgiveness Program. If you have a personal finance question, Nancy and Ryder are ready to take that question. You can always send us an email to money@mpbonline.org. So, Nancy, when money's been given out, scammers come out of the woodwork. What do we need to know about avoiding some sort of a scam?
I'm going to borrow Sean Mercer's advice from last week, is don't answer the phone. Don't respond to text. Don't respond to emails.
Move away. Live in a cave.
So you can find your servicer.
Grow your own tomatoes.
Yeah. Call the servicer. Deal with them directly. Mm-hmm. Find out, do you qualify? They can help you with that. They can help you with, you know, is your income already being reported? What we're hearing in some cases for people who are reporting their income on a regular basis through the loan forgiveness program, this forgiveness for this additional amount may be automatic.
Right. And also, it's similar to sort of a debt consolidation. You don't really need help from some third party.
No.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes. They have all the tools. And I always tell people that your servicer is the one who knows all of the information about your loan and has the ability to make all of these modifications, put you in the programs. They are motivated to maybe put you in a certain program or not, but in general, they are just servicing the loans. They're not out to get you, and so don't be afraid of calling them. And I spoke with somebody earlier, and another thing Sean Mercer always mentions, a .gov website, please, that is a government property. The studentaid.gov website, you may need to make a login. You may need to put in some personal information there to find out more about your loan and what you are eligible for. But that is a trustworthy property. So don't be afraid of that when you are approaching it.
We've got a caller on the line, so let's say good morning to Ruth, who's called in from Yazoo City. Ruth, you're on with us. Go ahead.
Thank you. I read that loan forgiveness will actually raise the cost of tuition. And is that true? And if so, how does that work?
So that's an interesting kind of pet issue I have with a lot of the very existence of student loans. So I think tuition is higher because of one of the reasons that tuition can go higher is because money for college is readily available. It is very easy to get student loans. And if it's very easy to get student loans, it's very easy to get a lot of money to pay for college. And if it's very easy to get a lot of money to pay for college, then colleges are going to see that money and want to raise prices. So there are all sorts of things kind of knocking on each other and leading to that. One of my concerns would be that current forgiveness does lead to an impression that student loans are even cheaper and easier than we previously thought. So it's a concern that maybe that will allow colleges to raise prices and people will feel a little more comfortable with it. One thing they have emphasized with this loan forgiveness is that it is absolutely a one-time thing. And again, the way the law was written, this is a one-time national emergency sort of situation, and that's why it's happening. But I do have a concern that the one party in all of this that has no skin in the game, that has no consequences, are the institutions. And like we've seen, like the Department of Education knows, not every degree issuing institution is even good or doing good by their students. They have an extensive list of places where people have gotten degrees or paid tuition to that are defunct, that were defrauding them. And those people are getting forgiveness blanket. And again, the consequences on the institution for offering a degree that was not economically viable, was not a good degree, was not a high quality education, there's just minimal consequences on them. So that could be a concern that it's certainly not doing anything to lower the price of tuition.
Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Ruth. Let's stay on the phone lines and go this time to KJ calling in from Jackson. Good morning. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I retired before full retirement age, and I'm still working. I intend to keep working for quite a while, and I'm trying to debate on what to do with the income beyond Social Security, because with the stock market, with all the uncertainty out there, is it better to just put it in a savings account? Because I want to have access to it, to part of it. So what are my options to utilize that money? And
KJ, quick question. How long ago did you start taking your Social Security?
I started at, what's that age, 62, and I'm 68 now.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, so for folks in a similar situation where you take Social Security, but then you realize you still want to keep working and you don't need all this extra income, there is a six-month window where you can kind of stop, pay back that Social Security money, and keep accumulating credits. Because if you can keep letting your Social Security grow, so for instance, you're 68 now. I mean, your Social Security would have been maybe 60% higher just from waiting at this point. But as far as savings, if you want to access it, do you have other investments already that you're adding to?
Yeah, I have. My retirement is not what it should be. I contribute to an IRA every year, try to do the max there. Mm-hmm. Since I've retired. But I'm just trying to think about where to put that money.
KJ, I think you need to probably sit down with an advisor, because this is a bigger question to look at. What are your other assets? What are your income needs? And I'm always telling people, even when you retire, we start to think about, oh, I'm going to take all this money as soon as I retire. No, this is lifetime money. And because mm-hmm. it's lifetime money, you need to be able to beat inflation and certainly beat healthcare inflation, which means you're probably going to always have some in the growth area, some exposure to the stock market. But there's a reasonable way to do it. And so that's where you need to look at your entire picture, see where everything is and what makes sense for you.
So try to put some of it in the market.
Right. And you can do it gradually.
Okay. Okay. And when I take it out, even if I'm retired, I'm still going to have to pay taxes on it, right? Even if I'm getting Social Security, I'm going to have to pay money on the money I take out of, say, an IRA, right?
If you put it in an IRA, yes, you will.
Is there some other place that I could put it?
Yes.
And not you, have so that exposure?
You could consider putting it in a Roth IRA. So that would allow for tax-free growth, and you're not going to have that tax to pay when you take it out. There are some time limits on how long you need to leave it there, or you could just put it in a regular taxable account.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thanks, KJ, for your call. This is Money Talks on MPB Think Radio. Send an email to money@mpbonline.org. We're talking about who gets to stop paying on their student loans. What if you still have student loans to pay on? We'll tell you next. Money Talks is MPB Think Radio's personal finance broadcast. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotcher-Janderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. They're both chartered financial analysts, and Ryder holds the Certificate in Investment Performance Measurement from the CFA Institute. To ensure a smooth transition to repayment and prevent unnecessary defaults, the pause on federal student loan repayment will be extended one final time through December 31, 2022. Borrowers should expect to resume payments in January of 2023. We got another caller on the line, so we say good morning this time to Todd calling in from Summit. Todd, you're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like to make a comment about the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. I worked for the public school system for 14 years, and I had enrolled into the program, and of course, my loans have been bounced around. They've gone from Sallie Mae back to the Department of Education to Mohila, now Navia. And one of the things that I was told was when the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program was instituted, they would actually go backdate how much time you put into a public service system, and it would count towards whatever it was that you have paid in. I can tell you right now, anybody that has enrolled into the system, one of the things that they're going to tell you, or at least I've been told this in the past, is they're not going to backdate. They're going to look at it based on the date of the application. And that is a problem that some of your listeners may run into, is if they have applied for public loan forgiveness, they need to be very cautious of what all of their information and make sure that they have it all. Mm-hmm. Because that is the issue that I ran into.
Todd, can I ask you a question real quick? Yes. You had your loans forgiven? Or are you still in the process, or where are you there?
No. At the moment, my health went down, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, I've been unable to work.
So you do still carry a student loan balance?
I do.
So yeah. Have you looked at, I do want to say, Todd, your comment, this is exactly the sort of story we constantly hear about with the public service loan forgiveness. Ever since the first borrowers were eligible for it, forget when, but maybe about 5 or 6 years ago, they were first eligible for that forgiveness, and it just wasn't happening because of issues just like you outlined. And so one of the points that they're trying to make with this, one of the programs they're doing, is to try to address that we mentioned at the top of the show, until October 31st, there's a tight window there where there's a waiver on public service loan forgiveness eligible payments. It's a mouthful. I'm sure the official title is even longer, but essentially there were, again, the public service loan payments were very – they had a lot of very technical requirements. You had to make the payment. Yeah. You had to actually make the payment while you were currently working and in a specific loan plan for a specific type of loan. All sorts of specifics that people, like you're saying, didn't necessarily match, and it wasn't the fault of the borrower. I will say it was the fault of the servicer most of the time for giving bad information or not correctly classifying people. But this public service loan payment waiver, whatever we're calling it, available until October 31st. If you have made they have broadened the eligibility of payments that you may have missed. You may have made a partial payment. You may have made a payment that was under the wrong loan program. You may have made a payment that was on the wrong loan. You may not have correctly classified your employer things like that. They've broadened it so that you should be able to go back, find those payments, and get them to qualify for public student loan forgiveness. So while, Todd, your story is so typical and so horrible to hear, that is exactly the sort of thing they're trying to address. You know, I hope that you do have those payments, some qualifying payments, and you can go back and wrap those up. But they are saying, I know you've said they said they'd backdate it before and they didn't backdate it. It's taking the new rules at their word. They should be able to get backdated. They should be able to get qualified now. So I really hope that offers some relief to you and, of course, the millions of other borrowers in your same situation.
Yes, and I've also read that they kind of really don't want you doing anything until October the 1st. Is that correct?
So you can go ahead and start the public service waiver. There's information about it on the studentaid.gov website. I believe the October start date is when they're aiming to have the other applications out, but the public service loan waiver has been out. I'm not actually sure how long it's been out, but it's been out for a little while. I have seen the information where you can start that process. Of course, we'll be in October in a couple of weeks, but I think with the public service, you can go ahead and start that now. With the other applications, if you're not worried, if you're not eligible for public service, I believe all of that is going to start in October and run through the end of the year.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Also, Todd, you can find information about temporary changes to the public service loan forgiveness at pslf.gov. So that might be a useful resource for you as well. Thanks for the call. Let's stay on the phone lines. We've got Charlotte calling in from Louisiana on the line next. Go ahead, Charlotte. It's your turn.
Thank you. Good morning. Would you ask your guest to explain the difference in the benefit of the tax treatment of the 529 plans used to pay for education and the reversal of a desire of some states to tax the loan forgiveness amounts as income?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a lot, isn't it?
that's an interesting point that she highlights. We had not addressed that yet, is that some states, and when we say some states, I know that Mississippi is planning on taxing loan forgiveness. I don't know what other states. I'm sure a handful of them are planning on doing that. And so essentially, in a lot of cases, if you have a loan, just in general, we're talking about mortgages, personal loans, et cetera. If you take out a loan and then that loan is forgiven and you are not required to pay it back, in most cases, that looks like income, right? Because someone gave you money and you got the money. You didn't have to pay it back. Loans are tax-free, right? You can get money from a loan. You're paying it back. You don't pay tax on the loan that you took out. If it is forgiven, that looks like income. That is typically taxed. So public service loan forgiveness has, I don't think, ever been considered taxable income. That is part of the public service loan forgiveness package. It is just, it's not considered taxable income. With regular loan repayment forgiveness, and again, there are a lot of loan repayment plans that allow for some forgiveness at the end of, say, 20 years of payments. That forgiveness at the end is taxable income. And it always has been for those. And so for some people who are making little to no payments because of their income is so low, they're on that income-based payment, maybe that loan balance is increasing, they may end up with a large tax bill at the end of their term. Of course, the tax bill is typically it's way less money than the loan balance itself. But this is an interesting one because there's this $10,000 of forgiveness that everybody gets, and you don't necessarily even sign up for it. You may automatically get it. You may be ticking along just fine, happy with your payments. You've budgeted for it perfectly, and all of a sudden you get this forgiveness. And the state of Mississippi or whatever state you're living in may tax that as income. It feels rude of them to tax it because it's forgiveness, but it's not that unusual. And on $10,000, the highest Mississippi tax you would be paying is about $500. So you will need to plan for that tax expense in April or whenever you do and pay your taxes. And of course, that is, Charlotte points out, a very interesting thing. That is the exact opposite of saving in a 529 plan for college, because it's the exact opposite in Mississippi, because the amount that you can put into Mississippi 529 and get a tax deduction for is $10,000. So the most you can save on your taxes for saving for college is $500. And then the most that you can pay in taxes for having some of your loans forgiveness is also $500. So it's kind of weird. I really appreciate Charlotte for highlighting and how strange that is. But I do want to point out that loan forgiveness being taxed is it's not that unusual.
I still think it's rude.
It's rude. It's rude. But
I mean, really, we've had a vote to do away with the state income tax, but they're going to still tax this forgiveness on student loans. Wow.
Right.
Especially
since
a third of the people who owe on student loans don't have a degree. And those are the people who are struggling
that's
most to make
good
those
point.
Payments.
That is a very good point. It is a bit odd when the state is working really hard to reduce income taxes and reduce things that are considered income that they decide to come back and tack this one thing back into income tax at the last minute.
This is Money Talks. You can email money@mpbonline.org. We're talking about forgiving student loan debt today. Kevin Farrell here with Dr. Nancy Lotter-Janderson, president of New Perspectives, and Ryder Taft, portfolio manager at New Perspectives. Here's a program reminder. Tuesdays at 10 a.m., listen live to In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio. It always follows our show. So, Ryder, what if you paid off loans during the pandemic?
So, many people did continue during the pandemic. You are not required to pay on your federal student loans. All interest rates were brought to zero on those loans, and you were not required to pay on them. So with interest rates at zero, that balance should have been flat during the pandemic while you weren't required to pay on them. Some people did continue to pay on them because, of course, you can always do that. And for some folks, we did advise that. For some folks, it makes sense. For some folks, it makes sense to still have kept up their payments. But for many people, especially with these changes and this forgiveness, then it doesn't make sense to have done that anymore. If you paid onto your student loans, you are eligible for a refund of all of that money. So I'm not sure what the beginning date was. It may have been March or April 2020, but you are eligible to have that money sent back to you. And for some people, even if that just means you paid it in and you're just going to take it out for a couple months and pay it back in January, sometimes that makes sense, especially if you're going to get a little bit of forgiveness or if you're eligible for a newer, more advantageous plan. That's your money. Call your servicer. Ask for it back. If you were the folks who this does not make as much sense for is if you were on a flat payment plan, your income was high enough that even an income-based plan would have had you on a fairly high payment, and you're on a flat payment plan, and maybe you were just a few months away from getting it paid off anyway, it made sense to continue paying during the pandemic while your interest rate was at zero, and you could just go ahead and decrease that balance pretty quickly. So in those cases, you might want to just keep paying down.
A couple minutes left in the show. Nancy, what's being done for current and future borrowers?
Well, the biggest thing is forcing colleges to be accountable and to show that those loans are beneficial to the people who are taking them out, to monitor those graduates, to also look at people who take out loans and never get a degree. And so that's an issue as well. And that's where the biggest relief can come in because, you know, an education is an investment. We say it all the time. And for people who get a degree and get a degree that helps them earn a good income, repaying these loans is not a problem. But the problem exists for those people who never get that degree. In fact, the lowest amount of debt is going to be the people who don't have degrees. and they're more likely to be helped with this particular program along the way. So those things where we allow people to still get the education but not be so burdened with debt that they can't move forward, build households, do all the things they need to do, that's an issue. Do you know that we even have people now who are having their Social Security payments garnished to make payments on student loans?
And there's also some changes to terms of loans that people have right now. Previously, with a lot the best income-based plans, you were only required to pay up to 10%. Some of them are 10 or 15 or 20%, but the best ones were 10% of your income above 150% of the poverty level. So take out some spending money, that poverty level, and then take 10% of that. One, that poverty level is being increased to 225% of the poverty level. So you have a little more breathing room before those student loans start. And then the percentage of your income above that has been reduced to 5% of a borrower's discretionary income. And I believe that is limited to undergraduate loans. Also, forgiveness will be built in after 10 years to some of the smallest loans, so loan balances of $12,000 or less. Like Nancy mentioned, those folks are people who maybe they did not get a degree, maybe they just took out one or two classes and were not able to complete a degree, maybe their school got shut down, or community colleges where the cost of attendance is much lower. They may be eligible to have all of that forgiven a lot sooner than before. And another thing about the interest, a lot, if you are on an income based plan and you are unable to afford the interest, then you will not necessarily be required to pay that interest back. So that's just another benefit. Again, undergraduate loans, I've said it before that there are a lot of generous repayment terms that make them a very attractive loan to take out. And these repayment terms, these are incredibly attractive, and it makes it very attractive to take these loans out. And like Nancy said, I do hope that schools providing this education that we taxpayers are helping pay for. You can't fault someone for trying to improve their own lot, for trying to improve their own education, and trying to be a better contributing member of society. But for us taxpayers who are paying, because our money is going to the schools, I do hope that we get more accountability and hold them to a little higher standard.
We did mention earlier taxing the debt relief, and it looks like Mississippi does plan to do that. However, thanks to the American Rescue Plan, the debt relief for student loans will not be treated as taxable income on your federal income tax return.
And that's the big one there, because federal rates are much higher than our Mississippi rate.
All right. So as we wrap up, Ryder, if someone thinks they qualify, is maybe uncertain about all of this, I think, as we said at the beginning of the show, kind of where to start is going to your loan servicer.
Your loans. There are two places. There are two people you need to look to: the Department of Education at studentaid.gov, and you need to call your servicer, whoever that servicer is. If you don't know who your servicer is, again, studentaid.gov has tools to help you find out who that is. And those are the two authorities you need to trust. Don't trust anybody else, I guess, is what I'm saying.
And, you know, on Money Talks, we have various topics that we talk about, but we always look for your personal finance questions. We do it during the Tuesday show. But also, if you have something come up during the week that you'd like some clarification on, some information about, you can always email the show. Send it to money@mpbonline.org. Money Talks is a production of MPB Think Radio, funded in part by generous support from listeners. To hear today's show or a previous show, visit moneytalks.mpbonline.org or listen to the podcast by searching for Money Talks. Our show is produced by Liz Gill, engineered today by Jay White, and our call screener was Charles Arnold. For Dr. Nancy Lotridge-Anderson and Ryder Taff, I'm Kevin Farrell. Join us every Tuesday at 9 for Money Talks, heard only on MPB Think Radio.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.